I think Ian Hall is now on the call. So Ian's going to be our first speaker. Ian is at the University of Manchester, and he's part of that team there. And he's done a lot of work regarding care homes. And he's going to speak to you now about transmission within care homes. So just a reminder that if you have any questions, please use the Q&A button in the Zoom, not the chat, please. I'll pass over to you, Ian. Thanks.
Thanks, Chiara. Thanks, Matt. And thanks, Julia. And hello, everyone. So I'm going to talk about our work recently on care homes, or over the last year or so on care homes, and some of the future plans we have. So we, for those of you that don't know, I co-chair the SAGE social care working group with Jenny Harries, and we have a number of, we've looked at a number of policy questions in the last few months, last year. And so these are the ones that I'm not talking about in detail. One was around whether we should allow visitors into care homes. The simple answer to that is no, because they cause disease ingress potentially if they're bringing disease in from the community. But actually there are a lot of wider societal benefits to allowing visitors. And so there is a harm from the isolation. And so in October, November last year, we did a lot of work trying to evaluate the cost consequences of denying visitors. So this is almost a health economics question. You can look at it in terms of qualies, in terms of the harm caused by disease ingress and the harm caused by isolation. But it's we needed to sort of look at other metrics for the harm, building on the quality. And the other thing that's taken a lot of my energy and the wider social care working group's energy is optimizing the testing strategy. So that's building on work from London School of Hygiene. Colleagues in Strathclyde have also sort of looked at that, and sort of looking at how we should test staff, how we should test residents. It sounds obvious, any model will just tell you test as frequently as you can. But then there's a balancing act again there, because you've got false negatives, false positives, and you've got the distress caused to possibly very frail people by just testing them and sticking something up their nose every 5 minutes. So you have to sort of balance this quite carefully. But I'll focus here on the transmission. We need to understand the natural history. We also need to understand what actually are the transmission mechanisms, and hopefully that's going to be further work that we do under the National Core Study, the PROTECT project with HSE. But possibly also we've got a sort of big summit coming up with the EMG/PHE transmission group to look at the transmission in the specific settings. There's the contact structures. We don't really have a great insight into contact structures. There's a project in Leeds called the Contact Study, which will hopefully, it's putting tags on care home residents and staff. So hopefully that will give us a lot of data on who's meeting who, when and where, and the other interventions. But some of our early analysis did set up the creation of the sort of SAGE working group. And so to take people all the way back, why are we looking at enclosed institutions or enclosed societies? Well, back in 2009, we talked about this on SPIEM, and we did a review a little bit after that, after swine flu, which looked at the fact that smaller societies have higher attack rates. And that set us up in January, February, when cruise ships were still a thing. There were large outbreaks in certain cruise ships. And so with PHE colleagues, we were able to sort of fit models to the emerging data there to show that cruise ships would have high attack rates if you do nothing. And then Lorenzo did some work in late February, early March, looking at the impact on care homes of a sort of freefall epidemic. And then we started to see care home outbreaks. So we saw those outbreaks emerging. And so we didn't have data on how many cases or how many deaths at this time in sort of April, May, but we did have data on outbreaks being reported to PHE. And so we were able to fit models to that to estimate kind of where the hotspots were. And in April and May, in the sort of bulk of the first wave, the hotspots were in Liverpool and Oxford and certainly London as well. And that's partly, you can look at where the data, where the care homes were, and you can sort of see that there is a spatial proximity there. And so there was a sort of staff component here. Staff, the care homes were nearby and they probably shared staff. Some of them were the same chain, so they certainly shared staff early on. So you can start to look at infection control policies. And we had a paucity of data at that point. So one of our key priorities in May and June was to improve the data. And so we had pillar one and pillar two data. So the graph you're looking at here are for two care homes, two very large care homes that suffered a large outbreak. So these are not representative. But the black line positive values are the negative tests. The red lines show the number of positive tests per day. And then the blue lines are total deaths and the purple line are confirmed COVID deaths. So negative values are deaths, positive values are testing. And you can see here, if you squint a bit at the data and sort of look at this, you can see sort of an epidemic curve on both fronts. But what it shows is that some care homes had good attribution of COVID and some homes were less good. And that's not because the homes were incompetent, it's because they didn't have access to testing. So there were probably, certainly on the right hand side there, there's a lot of deaths, an excess of deaths, and there were probably a lot more cases that were not recorded. And we can look at this, we've got the deaths at every care home level, so we can look at care home size. So in these graphs, the x-axis is the size of the care home, the number of registered beds, and then the y-axis is the average number of deaths recorded. And so you see a sort of saturation to sort of 15 in, and the black line is 2020 deaths in the first wave. The blue line are the equivalent deaths in the same period for 2019. So you can see a rough doubling of deaths in the first wave. But you can also see that the variance in those deaths has shot up, which is a sort of sign of clustering within the care home. So some care homes had a lot of deaths and some care homes had pretty much no excess deaths. And we've taken this a bit further forward and been able to sort of fit regression models to the data, the reported mortality, and show that there were 29,000 excess deaths in wave one, as opposed to the 19,000 that were reported, attributed to COVID. So it's about 10,000 more deaths. And we can then fit models to those deaths. So we can take a care home size and we can sort of look at the number of deaths. We can allow for baseline deaths. We can allow for additional deaths. And then we can work out, we can try and work out the transmission within. Now, unfortunately, if you use a very simple model, stochastic model, then you can pretty much fit any R naught to these data points with different case fatality rates and different ingress rates. And so there is a identifiability problem. And so we're trying to revise this by having better estimates of case fatality, better estimates of ingress, and a better mathematical structure on the household model. And that's work being done by Heather here in Manchester and Thomas and collaborating with Joe Hilton in Warwick. And talking of case fatality rate, so Chris Overton has adapted the sort of case fatality rate estimates techniques to suit with the data we have. We've got date of notification rather than date of death, and there's sort of all sorts of weekend effects, lulls in the reporting. But we can accommodate that, and we can see we've got the testing data, we've got the mortality data, and so we can estimate that the case fatality rate in care homes is probably around about, well, between 16% and 20%. So this is much higher than the 10% for over 80s that is normally used, but is a sign of the frailty of the population in the care homes. And there is regional variation. London is a little bit lower, probably nearer 12% or so. Northeast is almost double, so it's sort of 25, well, up to 30% in the northeast. That's probably not an inherent difference in the virus. That's probably more an artifact of there's not enough care homes in the northeast, and so to get into a care home you have to be very, very frail in the northeast, whereas London has a very young population and a lot, relatively speaking, a number of care homes. The population is probably healthier. And then we were asked in November to start thinking about forecasting deaths. We started the forecasting at a point of plateau in the curve. So the figure on the left here is the number of deaths per day. And we sort of fitted a generalized additive model to that to give us some sense of the trend and where it might go. We can also fit to the outbreak data, which is the panel in the top right. That looks quite different because there looks like there were a large number of outbreaks in August, September time, taking us up to a plateau in October. And if you look at the deaths, there are no deaths in September. That's not because of a lag in the death time to death. That is because a lot of the outbreaks associated with August and September are actually exposures, so they're very small sort of incidents, only involving a couple of people, probably only staff, whereas then sort of they start declaring outbreaks, which would have had, so there's a slight change in that sort of date time series. But the bottom right panel shows the sort of the red dots are the actual number of deaths over a 2-week period. And the black dot is the sort of forecast. So we're not way off, but there's sort of refinement is possible here. And we've sort of can bring in the testing data and we can bring in the outbreak data. So this method can be refined. And then just to sort of some of the more recent work we've been doing, there was a question about the impact of vaccination. So one of the things we had to work out was given that there are outbreaks in wave one, given there are outbreaks in wave two, there's past exposure in some of the care homes. So can we work out what the susceptibility is of the residential population in care homes? And the little table on the right shows that the care homes with wave one deaths and the care homes with wave two deaths, there are about 15,000 care homes. So half of care homes have reported no deaths in either wave one or wave two. There's a lot of care homes that reported only wave one deaths, and a lot of care homes that reported only wave two deaths, which sort of suggests that there is some protection. And you have to allow for the fact that care homes are not a stable population. There's replenishment of residents and there's replenishment of staff. And so the average life residency period in a care home is about 2 years. If you fit from the data on mortality, then there's a sort of 32-month residency on average, which is about 2 years on median, if you assume that's exponentially distributed. And so given we're 9 months, a year into that, we've got to allow for the fact that 70% or more of our population is probably new, and so won't have been there during the past outbreaks. So we can account for that, and by doing that, we can estimate that using mortality alone, that half the care homes have got low high rates of susceptibility. If the disease gets in, it would spread. And then the other half, on average, there's about 40% immunity, so 60% susceptibility in the remaining homes. So that sort of is some indication of the disease burden to date. And we've just seen only on Friday we saw some analysis from PHE Easter 6 study, Easter 13 study, which showed that there was sort of a protective effect of past exposure. So yeah, this is a sign. We'll do some verification of this method against the PHE investigations. And then we've been looking at vaccine impact, and so. We did in January, we did a very rapid assessment to show that that given the vaccine efficacy estimates from then, the preliminary sort of estimates, that we needed to vaccinate 75% of the staff and residents. That rapidly went through towards the end of start of Feb. They'd vaccinated 90% of residents, 95% I think now is the current estimate. And the current estimate is about 65% of staff. Some regions have better than others. I think London is down about 50% of staff. And so the question came back then, is that enough, or do they need to do more staff? So we sort of split up a two risk group model. And that indicates that you need to be at certainly 65% of staff is not enough. The minimum target should be about 80%. And obviously there's a lot of assumptions and sensitivity to that. So this is not a genuine threshold. These are small institutions. R0 doesn't really make a lot of sense in these institutions. And so this is sort of a rough assessment, not a definitive assessment, and colleague. And so 80% is sort of illustrative, and so yeah, but colleagues are using that with the caution needed, and it's very much seen as a minimum, not a target. So just to sort of wrap up, there was a rapid trend in April. There was also a sort of, I haven't really spoken about it, but in that those mortality curves, you can see there was an increase for wave two. There was an increase in October. It plateaued off and then surged again through December into January, and now has plateaued off. It's no surprise. Well, hopefully it's no surprise to people that the periods where it plateaus off and starts to decrease are periods of lockdown and periods of free movement, free mixing in the community are periods where deaths in care homes grow very quickly. We now have better data to monitor those trends, but data can always be improved. And really, one of my sort of bugbears is so we sort of get a lot of high level regional kind of data, especially for vaccination. But what we really need are fine scale care home level data to really make some of these assessments. We're very close to being able to get the vaccine data at care homes level, and we're working with providers. We've got here in Manchester, we've got some data from one of the big providers, one of the big chains, to understand their staff data as well as their other data. We haven't yet got their vaccine data, but we'll probably go back and have a conversation with them about that soon. But the key issues, I think, are we still don't really understand staff numbers and things. We have a better understanding, but staff are a highly transient population. There's very low retention, and there's no professional body. So it is actually very hard to understand social care staff. And that's the care homes are the tip of the iceberg. Care homes are the easy bit of this jigsaw. The harder bit is then domiciliary care and things like that, where there's even less good data and a harder definition of the denominator. We are starting to get data on the connectivity to hospitals in the community, but the hospitals are a challenge because the linked data takes about 3 months, 4 months to sort of come through. So it's almost it's completely useless in real time. But hopefully some of the data linkage studies from HDI UK or Open Safely will address some of those issues during the lifetime of Juniper, and we can leverage some of that. And hopefully we will get, again, during the lifetime of Juniper, we'll get good contact rates within these settings. And I haven't really spoken about the prisons and things. So the testing question that we had for care homes, that they translates across in a slightly different way to other enclosed institutions, prisons being one of them. And so Lorenzo here has been working closely with the prison service, HPMS, with their testing strategies as well, and we're looking at other technologies, point of care technologies, PCR, point of care PCR, and things like that, to see if that adds value to the situation. And then finally, I will just say thank you to PHE and CQC for a lot of the data that we've used here. And the EPI group here in Manchester, as well as Juniper. And thank you to my co-chair, Jenny Harries of the SAGE Social Group, Social Care Working Group, and Steve, who does the secretariat on his own. I will end there and pass back. I'll stop sharing.
Thanks, Ian. I don't know whether you know your video wasn't on, if you wanted to switch your video on, but
there we go.
Okay, just in case people wanted to see who you were.
It's saying the host has stopped it, which is why I'm
Arnel, can you just, I think Arnel will sort that out with you. It should get sorted in a minute. And we've got one question in for you. So how does the staff resident ratio impact the death transmission patterns and vaccination effect?
It certainly does to a certain extent. I think the staff resident ratio varies from, it depends if you're looking at residential care or nursing care. And so I think we have estimates from Scottish government that there's a sort of 1.1 ratio of staff to residents. That might be a shade higher, it might be nearer 2 for nursing care, where there's a greater dependency on care. And that is sensitive. I won't try and blag the fact that I don't have the numbers to hand. But it's a work in progress. So we are sort of looking at this. But yeah, so I'll probably stop there. But no, it is sensitive, certainly. And it is unknown. Certainly in nursing care, the contact rates will be greater, but it's incredibly hard. I think Alicia Rosello at London School's probably done the most work on this to sort of make sense of it whilst we're waiting for contact to deliver sort of results from the tagging study.
Right. There's another question come through. So you showed that the number of cases in care homes increased with the size of care homes. So does the case rate, i.e. percent of residents infected, also increase with care home size?
Yes is the simple answer. We can't be too definitive there, because testing actual physical testing was very challenging in wave one. So we'd have to look at something like the Vivaldi project to sort of answer that, who are looking at serology, and I think they're only publishing the serology results, so that they're starting to get the serology come through. But yeah, I mean, I think the deaths going up with care home size does map to a greater attack rate.
Great, thank you.